Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Ahí va a llegar el gol del Arsenal. Ozil marca Mesut Ozil. Alexis en el descuento ha marcado el Arsenal, como viene siendo habitual esta temporada. Gol de Alexis, 1-0 Arsenal.
This is Arscast Extra.
Hello there, welcome to another Arscast Extra, as always with James from Gunnerblog. Good morning to you.
Good morning to you.
How's your interlull been going?
It's been going.
Exciting times?
Unremarkable times, I would say.
Yeah.
No particular excitement. I haven't watched that much football. Actually, I tell a lie. I watched the Ireland game and then I watched the England game the following day.
Mm.
Did you watch the Ireland match on Scotland-Ireland match?
No. I was playing five-a-side on Friday night, and I think I could have watched the second half if I'd really wanted, but I didn't. And I watched the first half of the England match the other night, actually, before
you
I went
the wrong half in that respect.
I certainly did. It was pretty bad.
Yeah.
Pretty bad. Mostly, I've been watching this Italian TV show called Gomorra.
Oh, yeah, I've heard about that.
Yeah, it's good. It's good. Mm-hmm. Yeah, sort of about the mafia in Naples and all that kind of... Certainly not stereotypical Italian stuff.
Yeah,
but it's good. It's good. I've been enjoying it.
So there we go. An alternative way to get through the interlo.
Yes, exactly. Italian crime drama. There has been stuff going on, though, from an Arsenal point of view. We've had during the inter. I tell you what. Let's stick with England, seeing as we were just talking about that. And Jack Wilshere apparently was man of the match, playing DM, and Danny Welbeck scored twice. So that's good.
Yeah, I mean, Wilshere played well again in that role. I have to say, though, I'm not sure he's been particularly tested in it yet. You know, it's not a natural position for him, but he basically plays as a kind of quarterback, you know, a deep-lying playmaker.
Mm.
And his range of passing looks really good. You know, he's got that short passing, those little bursts, but he's also got a bit of a longer ball, which enables him to spread the ball to the flanks. And generally, he's done well, but I'm not sure the defensive side of his game has been tested at all yet, really.
Yeah. Two goals for Welbeck. That'll do his confidence some good after five games without a goal for us.
Yeah, he's racking them up for England, isn't he?
Yeah. He's having a good season in all competitions for club and country.
Yeah, exactly. With that proviso, the numbers are good. It's a little bit odd that he hasn't scored in the last five games. I'm not sure that his performances have been, you know, any less than they were. I think he's just been a little bit unlucky on a couple of occasions. I think back to that Burnley game, you know, he had an effort sort of cleared off the line where the defender, I don't think, knew too much about it. Another one just before Callum Chambers scored. So I'm pretty confident that goals will come back into his game. His goals for England were pretty good. The second one, really nicely taken. I don't know if you've seen it.
Yeah.
It's that classic sort of left-hand side of the penalty area, opens his body out. Really good goal.
Kieran Gibbs as well played, came through without snapping.
A miracle.
Mm.
And some felt Kieran Gibbs had a really good game. I thought he was not as good as he is for Arsenal. I think that without that understanding from the players around him, you know, he doesn't have the same ability to sort of attack in those neat little triangles that he does with his club side. But I thought he did very well. You know, certainly wasn't tested defensively, but let's hope he doesn't play against Scotland, to be honest. That's the one I'm a little bit worried about, because that could get quite feisty.
Yeah, but I mean, is that not just general fear from an Arsenal point of view? Shouldn't a game between Scotland and England be, by its very nature, feisty? You know, isn't that the joy of it?
Or I'm hoping so. I just don't want any Arsenal players involved if I can possibly avoid it.
In the feistiness.
Yeah, exactly. No, I think it'll be entertaining, but, you know, you do worry about the likes of Wilshere and Gibbs. It's a shame that some of our England internationals are some of our most brittle players.
Mm. Is there a connection? Perhaps it's something to do with the fluoride in the water.
Could be.
Yeah?
Could be.
Yeah. Aaron Ramsey played for Wales last night and didn't have a good game by all accounts, but he's reacted a little bit in the press to the criticism he's had. I think he was accused of playing Hollywood football by Charlie Nicholas. And we know that Arsene Wenger has spoken a little bit about him in terms of, you know, he has to, you know, concentrate on his all-round game and not necessarily focus on goal scoring. And he said, I've had a few injuries, I'm just getting back, still not 100% physically there, it takes a bit out of me, it will take me a few more games to get back to my best, I'm not worried. Criticism, or certain criticism from people, is unfair. What do we make of that?
I suppose it's a fair enough point of view. I mean, you know, he may well be physically short. He's had some injury problems this season and he's been pressed back into action relatively quickly at times. But I don't know. I'm not sure that's a full explanation. I'm not sure that explains some of his decision making on the field.
Mm.
Yeah, it's really difficult to know. I mean, obviously he's feeling sensitive about it. He probably recognises himself that his form's not what it was. Is it fitness? Really hard to say without knowing the intimate details. I mean, I don't get that impression, though, looking at him. He seems to be getting about the pitch as well as he ever has done. Mm. It's more his decision-making and what he does on the ball, but maybe that's something that comes with rhythm. What do you think?
It could well be. I was just going to say that maybe if a player is in a, you know, physically in good form and mentally in good form and confident, the instinctive things that they do tend to come off, as we saw with Ramsey last season. But when you're trying just that little bit too hard, you know, it can be a little bit counterproductive in a way, because I think we see that when Ramsey does try too hard, It really doesn't work. I think more than anyone that I can think of in this Arsenal side, that when they're not at 100% or not, like, they haven't found their rhythm, the bad things that they do appear to be really, really bad. Like, you know, the back heels to nobody, or hitting the ball out for a throw in when he's trying to make a pass. Wasn't there one earlier in the season where I think he wanted to play a crossfield ball, probably to the right back, and he shanked it over Mertesacker's head and out for a corner.
I think that might have been against Palace in the opening day, something like that.
Yeah. So, I mean, when it doesn't work for him, it really, really doesn't work. I don't know, maybe just more games. I mean, I think we forget, like, Wilshere and himself, the season has been very stop-start. In terms of how many games they've played consecutively to allow you to build that rhythm and that confidence that you need. So hopefully after this international break, they can stay fit and get in the team.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting point you make about the sort of wild disparity in Ramsey's performances. You do tend to either get one or the other, don't you? And when things don't come off for him, it's very noticeable.
Mm.
More so than with certain other players, probably.
Yeah.
And in fact, he had a couple of games like that last season, I think, but grabbed a goal in them, so it kind of escaped attention.
Yeah.
And now that he's not scoring, you know, we're picking up on it that much more.
Hmm. Other people or other players who've been in the news this particular interlull: Lukas Podolski, Tomasz Rosicki. Podolski twice has come out since he went away with Germany and spoken about how unhappy he is. And I think we have to make the distinction between a player getting on a soapbox and declaring to the world, I am unhappy, this is terrible, listen to me. He's obviously being asked about his situation. And when you've started just one game out of the 19 that Arsenal have played, it's a natural question for journalists to ask you. Are you happy? What's going on? You know, do you feel like things need to change? And he's been pretty upfront about it, saying, no, I'm not happy. And something has got to change. You know, can we be surprised that a player of 29 years of age You know, with a reputation that he's got, and the experience that he's got, he's hardly going to sit around and say, "Well, no, look, I'm quite content here to sit and pick up my wages." I mean, that's kind of the last thing we want to hear from a player in that position, anyway, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, a lot of players of his generation retired from the German national team after the World Cup. He didn't. He chose to stay involved. But if he wants to be part of that squad moving forward, he probably knows he needs to start getting some football somewhere. And I think Joachim Löw actually said as much, saying, you know, Podolski needs to play more if he wants to stay in the squad. So I think it's definitely a big issue for him. I think you can't be too surprised or annoyed that he's made his feelings public. I mean, I think we all sense that anyway. And, of course, Arsene Wenger's on French television's comeback, hasn't he, and said, denied that he's for sale for €5 million or something like that.
Yeah, he said, I'm the one who sets the prices, which reminded me a bit of Breaking Bad.
Yeah.
Arsene Wenger as Walter White, I am the one who knocks.
Yeah.
I am the danger. Although I can't really see.
I am the one who negotiates with Galatasaray.
As he goes down to his basement to cook up a whole batch of crystal meth. Maybe that's the problem this season. All our players are on crystal meth.
Yeah, that would explain a lot.
Yeah.
But yeah, I thought it was telling that Arsene was like, no, you know, the stories of this price are nonsense. But he didn't quite say Podolski's definitely not leaving. You know?
Well, I think he said he's not for sale.
Right.
So, which is quite categorical. But then, you know, that doesn't necessarily mean anything. He's not for sale and there is no offer is what he said. But, I mean, I think it's also quite interesting that Podolski, you know, when he is being asked about his situation at Arsenal, isn't saying, OK, I'm not in the team right now, but look, I'm going to keep working when I get my chance, etc., etc. I think he's aware, obviously, given Wenger's reluctance to use him, that usually means that the manager has his mind made up to a certain extent about whether or not that player is part of his plans in the long term.
I think you mentioned on your blog recently, forgive me if I'm wrong, but about a passage in Amy Lawrence's new book where Wenger talks about Lukas Podolski and signing him.
Yeah.
And he says, initially, I planned to play him as a number nine or on the wing. And then very quickly I realised he just couldn't play as a number nine.
Mm.
And I do kind of feel like, even at that early stage, that was a little bit the death knell for Podolski's time with Arsenal. Because ever since then, there's been this slight issue of fitting him into the team. And it's a bit odd, isn't it? You know, Wenger signed him thinking, oh, I'll be able to play him through the middle, but it just didn't transpire as something that was possible. I mean, is that a flaw in the scouting? Or, you know, it seems odd that was the plan and then it was so quickly shelved.
Yeah, he said, I bought him to be a centre forward or a wide player, but after a while I thought he's only a wide player, not a centre forward. So, I mean, I think there was certainly a measure of versatility there, but, you know, maybe in his first couple of games he started him up front, didn't he? In the summer, I remember, bought Giroud and we bought Cazorla, we bought Podolski, and Podolski started up front in the first couple of games. But very quickly he decided that wasn't his position. I mean, I think the issue, we've been down it before, is that he's not a centre forward who could play in the system we've been playing the last couple of years.
No.
Like, he can't do what Giroud did, and he can't necessarily do what Welbeck does now. But maybe in a team where a front two isn't completely out of the question anymore, he's got more value in that position than he would have. The issue about him being a wide player, you know, he's got great delivery and he just tends to be a bit lethargic out wide. You know, we've seen it in games where it just doesn't seem to work for him as a wide player. I mean, I would see him probably more as a forward off another striker than a wide forward in the modern game. Do you know what I mean? From my point of view, if that's where you had to pick Podolski, that's probably where I'd pick him. Whereas a wide player these days has to be a bit more creative, a bit more inventive, probably be a bit quicker than Podolski is. You can't dispute the delivery he's got with his left foot, but it's being able to work himself into the positions to make that delivery count. So So there you go. Thomas Rosicki as well. He had a bit of a moan.
He did, yeah. And it's really interesting, isn't it? I mean, he was such an important part of the squad last season. I think he played 30, 40 games, something like that. And like Podolski, he can barely get a kick at the moment. Mm. Again, like Podolski, when he's had the chance, he hasn't been great. But, I think it's fair to say that if you're not getting regular minutes, we talked about it with Ramsey and Wilshere, the same is even more true of these fringe players, that it's very hard to find any kind of form.
Yeah. On the other hand, though, Joel Campbell, a player who many of us thought would be particularly cheesed off, has taken to his own website, that sounds terrible, but he's used his own website to address stories about him being furious. Now, he's been left out of the squad for a couple of games recently. He hasn't even made the 18. And he says, what they've been saying is not true. I'm very calm. I have not been furious. Obviously, yes, I'd like to be playing, but that's something that has to be earned. Arsenal is one of the best teams in the world, blah, blah, blah. I have to keep patient, keep training. I know my chance will arrive, and I'll have to take advantage of it when it comes. So is he hugely optimistic, B, playing the right kind of game in terms of the media and his own character so nobody thinks he's a troublemaker, or C, quite detached from the reality of his situation at Arsenal because I don't know if his chance is going to come at this point.
Maybe he saw the Podolski quotes and thought, this is my chance.
Yeah.
If we can shift that German out, I'll be one up the pecking order.
That's true.
As you say, and Podolski's situation makes clear, even that spot on the pecking order doesn't guarantee much playing time.
Yeah.
I think it's B. I think it's managing the kind of PR element of this. You know, it's not healthy for any player to be associated with those headlines of strops and storming out and that kind of thing. Especially one at that early stage in his career who's probably thinking that his next move will probably be the one that defines him.
Mm.
If he goes to a Benfica or something like that, you know, that's the club where he's going to be signing a 4-year deal and looking to make an impact over the peak period of his career. I think that there's an element of this. I imagine that his agents probably said, look, you don't want to upset anyone at Arsenal, but equally you don't want to put any potential suitors off because that seems to me to be the way it's going.
Yeah. I mean, would it be unfair to say that a team like Benfica is probably where he would fit in best in terms of his overall level and the expectation? And
I mean, you know, Benfica are a good side. I think he could play for a lot of good teams. I just think that he's a little bit unfortunate in that he's at a club where we are sort of inundated with options in those areas. If you look at the Premier League, for example, I think if he was in, say, the Liverpool squad, he'd be getting more game time than he is at Arsenal. I just think that, he happens to be a player in a position in those sort of wide areas where we have an abundance of talent, and it means it's very, very difficult for him to make the breakthrough. Mm. And I can't see him getting a sustained opportunity to do so. So he may have to go elsewhere to further his career.
And it is going to be more difficult with Theo Walcott back now and Olivier Giroud back. If Campbell is being pushed out of the squad by Sonogo simply because we need another centre forward option, Giroud is going to push Sonogo out of the squad. So unless something happens to Alexis or to Walcott again or to Oxlade-Chamberlain or to Cazorla or to Podolski, you know, where and how does it happen?
Exactly. Mm. I find it very hard to see. Did I tell you have you heard my Thomas Rosicki conspiracy theory, by the way?
No, I haven't. Please.
Oh, it's ridiculous.
Okay.
But I was reading about Mikel Arteta's new deal, and there was some speculation that the final year of his contract might involve some sort of extension triggered by a number of appearances. And I wondered if the same might apply to Rosicki, because I remember when he signed a new deal last year, it was called by a lot of people a 2-year deal. But I wonder if it's one of these where he has to play a certain number of games in the first year to win the second year. And could that explain the slight reluctance to bring him off the bench if we've already decided that we're not going to want to retain him beyond the summer?
Mm. Why give him a 2-year deal then? Why not just give him a 1-year deal? He's 34 years of age. I think if you'd sat down with Thomas Rosicky and said, here's a 1-year deal, you know, we can discuss another 12 months, you know, towards the end of the deal, see how it all goes, see how we're feeling, see how you're feeling, you know.
Well, I mean, yeah, for that reason, I always would have thought it was a 1-year deal. But if you read, I don't know, the Mirror or elsewhere, they called it a 2-year deal at the time. So a bit of an odd one, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know. That's my conspiracy theory, guys. Run with it.
Yeah. I thought it might be something a little more exciting than that.
Really? I'm sorry.
No, I mean, I thought maybe you were going to say that Rosicky was behind some kind of worldwide event and Arsene Wenger found out and was thoroughly displeased by it and has punished him by keeping him on the bench.
I mean, it could be that. There have been some salacious rumours, haven't there, about Rosicky?
Yeah. I mean, what if he, for example, was writing songs for One Direction? Should he not be punished for that?
Well, if Arsene knows about that and has punished him accordingly, then he probably deserves more credit than he's getting.
Mm. See, he could be using a pseudonym, you know, to write his music. Clint Axman or something like that.
He's more of a metaller, though.
He is more of a metaller, but maybe that is the whole key to this conspiracy theory, because nobody would expect a metal guy to be writing pop hits for One Direction.
It's the perfect cover.
Exactly. And Arsene Wenger's discovered this, perhaps by chance, walked into the dressing room, Rosicky's there, singing a song, and Arsene's turned on his radio on the way home and heard One Direction and then gone, oh my God.
It's the same song.
Yeah. He must pay for this. But I can't let it, he's a good man.
It would be too much of an embarrassment for him and the club for me to take this public.
Absolutely. And he's a good man, Arsene. He wouldn't, you know, despite the fact he wants to punish him, he doesn't want to stain his reputation in public. And this is why. This is it. There's my conspiracy theory.
Okay. I think yours may be more likely to be true.
I think so.
It's certainly more fun, anyway. So quickly, on those three players,
yes,
Rosicky, Podolski, Campbell, do you think they will all be here in February?
There's a good question. I don't see Rosicky going anywhere.
No, me neither.
I could possibly see Podolski going somewhere, depending on the current state of fitness of the other options.
Mm-hmm.
And Campbell, well, yeah, I mean, he strikes me as a kind of a lone candidate, doesn't he? For again, fitness would be an issue here. But if we had everyone fit, it wouldn't surprise you to see Campbell loaned out. I mean, if he's just not playing at Arsenal, then I don't see the harm in loaning him out somewhere. So okay. Yeah, Rosicky to stay, Podolski. Bearing in mind, if everyone's fit, I think Podolski could go in January and Campbell on loan.
I think Podolski and Campbell will go permanently.
Permanently in January?
I think so, yeah.
All right, okay. Well, look, there's something we can look back on.
Yeah, look back and laugh.
At the end of January, we'll hark back to this particular podcast. Okay, look, we're going to take a short break and we're going to be back with part two and your questions right after this. Welcome back to the Arscast Extra. Now for the part where we answer your questions sent to us on Twitter at GunnarBlog and at ArsBlog. The first question today comes from Sam at the Cannon, the underscore Cannon.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he's a little small guy that you might know. And he wants to know who should be more worried about their defence this weekend, Arsenal fans or United fans?
Oh, good question. So they've been suffering a lot of injuries in this international break, haven't they?
Yeah, I think Daley Blind has picked up an injury.
Yeah, and De Gea as well.
Yeah.
He dislocated a finger.
You need to work on your Spanish pronunciation there.
I do. Daley Blind and David De Gea. So they've both had problems. And I think Michael Carrick got sent home from England. I mean, they're having an arsenal of it, really.
Mm.
They have been all season.
Yeah, they have. They have. They've
given us a run for that for our money, haven't they, in terms of injuries?
Trying to steal our crown.
Yeah, steal our thunder. I don't know who's got the worst defence. I think they do, which is a pretty extraordinary thing to say.
Who are they going to play in defence? Raphael, I guess, at right back, or is he injured?
So they might have Lindegaard in goal, apparently. Raphael, I think, at right back. Luke Shaw at left back.
Mm-hmm.
In the centre...
Smalling
and not Rojo. He's out.
It could be McNair.
McNair. Yeah, McNair or Blackett. So I wouldn't say that is, you know, much stronger back four than ours on paper.
I used to do this thing when I looked at Arsenal, when we were lining up, and look at the opposition lineup, and I'd look at the opposition defence. And I think to myself, well, you know, if you can't score a goal or two against them, then what's the point in any of it? And then I realised after a while that, you know, despite the fact we might slag off certain players or what have you, there is a general quality to a player playing in the Premier League. And if they're well organised, they can thwart you. That was the word I was looking for. The last time it happened in a good way was when we were playing the FA Cup final at Wembley. And Alex Bruce went off and they brought Paul McShane on. And I turned around to Arseblog Tom and to Dave, another guy who was just sitting behind us. And I went, now we've got a chance. And I'm not sure much of that was down to Paul McShane doing anything particularly badly, but there's just a general lack of quality with Paul McShane. So I don't quite know what my point is, other than to say you can look at a back four of Raphael, McNair, Smalling and Shaw and think, yeah, we can have a really good go at that, but really might not make that much difference.
No. I mean, they did keep a clean sheet in their last game, albeit against Crystal Palace.
This does work conversely, though, when you're looking at an Arsenal back four that includes Monreal and Mertesacker at centre-half. Then it's like just intrinsically weak. So I don't quite know how to square this one off.
I mean, yeah, they kept a clean sheet against Crystal Palace with a back four that included Daley Blind, who is a midfielder, Ryan McNair, who is a teenager, and Antonio Valencia, who's also a midfielder.
Mm.
They've conceded one more goal than us in the Premier League to date.
So we're one better than them at defence.
We're one better in theory. In theory. In practice, it's going to be a shootout, isn't it? I mean, there should be goals in this game.
Imagine this ended 0-0.
Can you believe it? It would be extraordinary.
Imagine two heroic defensive performances. Blocks here and goal-saving line, clearing off the line there, and last-minute headers. And oh, imagine.
What kind of injuries have they got in attack? I think Falcao's going to miss out.
Is he?
Yeah, it seems that way.
Yeah.
But they've still got Van Persie, Rooney, Mata, all the gang.
Angel of...
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home,
you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
It's a brand new year, and what better time to get going with that online store you've been thinking of? Those "I was there when Arsenal actually scored a goal" t-shirts would fly off the shelves right now. And to get yourself up and running, you need Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way through to the did we hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort with thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 a month trial period at shopify.com/arsblog, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/arsblog now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/arsblog. Mary as well. He'll
Angel
be playing.
Of Mary.
The
yeah.
Angel of Mary.
He'll have been watching Callum Chambers' performance at fullback at Swansea and thinking,
yippee,
might fancy a go at him. Because yeah. He's also got that acceleration. You know?
And pace and delivery yeah. and skill and quality. And yeah, he's good.
He is a good player, so that's the worry. I don't know who should be more worried. I can understand the fears of both sets of fans, to be honest, in this situation.
Yeah. I think we should be more worried simply because we don't care what Manchester United yeah. think or how their fans feel. But there you go. All right.
Okay, well, there we go. Well, let's continue on the theme. This is from Alan Broughton, and I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. I suspect not. Broughton? Broughton? Broghan? He asks, provided we get no more news on injuries, as if, what's your team for Saturday? Does Walcott start?
Ooh, good question. What's my team? I think he's going to pick the same back four.
I do as well. Is that what you would do?
Yeah, probably, just because it is
a big game.
A big game. And look, much as you'd like to see Bellerin get a run out, Bellerin against Angel of Mary, yeah. He's got the pace to deal with it, but certainly not the experience. And Chambers is just a bit more experienced.
I think if you were going to play Bellerin in a game of this magnitude, you would have needed to give him a little run into it, I suspect.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, you would have thought playing him against some of the more... what's the word I'm looking for here?
Swansea-ish.
Yeah, but, you know, even then... the so-called lesser lights, you would have liked to see him give a game. So it's hard to see him give him a game against Manchester United. Midfield depends entirely on whether Arteta is fit. I hope he's fit.
Do we have any indication on that? I don't
know. Not yet. But I'm hoping Arteta is fit because I'd play him ahead of Flamini, and I think I'd play Ramsey or Wilshire. I think he might do something like he did against Chelsea, you know, where he kind of played Cazorla quite central too. Alexis and Welbeck have to start. Then it's an Oxlade-Chamberlain or Walcott decision, isn't it?
So do you think he might... I don't know, push one of Alexis or Welbeck wide and pack the central midfield a bit?
I think he might, yeah. I think he might.
I do as well.
And I think, yeah, I don't know whether I guess we don't know with Theo as to whether or not he's ready to start a game yet.
Be interesting to see. I mean, he didn't get on for England at the weekend, but I imagine he'll get some playing time against Scotland.
Yeah. And it's good because he never seems to get injured playing for England, does he?
No. What could possibly go wrong?
So, yeah, I think it's just trying to find the balance between playing your best 11 or playing the best players that you have available and the fact that playing those best 11 doesn't seem to be working out. So how do you change it effectively? Without robbing yourself of the ability to change things from the bench, should you need to. But I guess a lot will depend on the availability of Arteta. I mean, you'd if you could maybe play a midfield trio of Arteta, Ramsey and Wilshere, I think he'd like to do that.
Yeah, I think that's what he might do as well.
I think he'd like that. And I think Arteta would just give us that little bit more assurance and control at the base of the midfield as the other two hare about the place trying to score goals.
I think if he can, he'll go with Arteta, Ramsey and Wilshere. If Arteta doesn't make it, I still think he might just sort of sub Flamini into that three. And then I think Cazorla might miss out. I think I might go Sanchez and Oxlade-Chamberlain in the wide areas, and then Welbeck through the middle.
Yeah, you don't think you'll play Theo because Tim Hardwick at Arsenal was asking, you know, with the game likely to end 7-7, would you play Theo and go all out pace, bearing in mind United's defence?
I don't know. He's been very cautious, hasn't he, with Theo, and he said that he doesn't want to rush him. I think if Theo had got a few more minutes before this game, he might have had a chance. But with the way our games have been against, who was it, Anderlecht, he didn't get on at all, did he? Because we were in that sort of slightly odd position, and then he barely got a kick against Swansea. I can't see him being thrust into the starting lineup, I have to say.
Right.
And you're talking about options on the bench, and he gives you a great option on the bench, and I think that's where I'll start this one.
Right, okay. Before we get on with the next question, you remember we had a question a couple of weeks back about pronunciation of names?
Oh,
remember
yeah.
that? Well, our friend Konrad, here he is, Petrusevic, with a good Polish name, his sister has recorded the correct Polish pronunciation of our goalkeeper's name. So, I don't know if you can hear this or not. I'm going to play it. I don't know if you can hear it, but let me know if you can. Hang on.
Wojciech Szczęsny.
Do you hear that?
Very faintly.
Okay, hang on. Let me go.
Wojciech Szczęsny.
How about that? Any better?
Yeah. Wojciech
Szczęsny.
Wojciech Szczęsny.
Right. So there.
That's us told.
That's us told. But I'm not going to pronounce it like that because it just sounds odd to me.
Well, it's just too difficult.
Yeah, way too hard, I think.
You know, you come to our country, we'll pronounce your name however we want.
Yeah.
Wojciech Szczęsny.
There, listen.
Wojciech Szczęsny.
Was that louder?
Szczęsny.
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 No, listen.
Wojciech Szczęsny.
Szczęsny. There's a definite N in there somewhere.
Really?
Yeah, because...
Rogue N.
No, well, it's not that rogue, is it? Or maybe
well,
it is. Maybe
if it's at the front.
Mm.
Say it. Play it again.
Hang on. Here we go. One sec.
Wojciech Szczęsny. Wojciech Szczęsny.
Huh. See?
Wojciech
Wojciech Szczęsny.
Hmm.
See?
Well, well done. Well done. She's nailed it.
Thank you, Wanda.
Thank you very much, Wanda. If we could continue this, if people from all around the world want to get in touch with the proper pronunciations of some of our players, I suspect we might be getting Rosicki wrong sometimes.
Yeah, because there's the whole Rosicki. Yeah. I think it's Rosicki, but yeah, it could be. Could be.
Let us know. Record your correct Arsenal pronunciations. We could learn something. I mean, obviously we can't learn it. I still can't do it. But it's a nice thought, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. Jack Wilshere.
Jack, yeah.
Jack Wilshere.
Aaron Rumsey. Rumsey. Aaron Rumsey.
Kieran Gibbabababas. All right. Leaving that aside.
On.
Yes.
Mm.
Here is a question from... it's from Jim Mooney. He's Jim Mooney _. Not Jim _ Mooney. He says, what is the most irritating squad number? Viva 7, Sanya 3, Diaby 2, or Gallas 10?
Oof, it's got to be Gallas 10, hasn't it?
Yeah. Shot. Yeah. Anything to do with Gallus was the most irritating thing of all time.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, Galas 10 was horrendous. It was an affront, wasn't it, to the shirt and the number and everything it stands for.
Yeah. Yeah.
The arrogance of the man.
It's unforgivable.
It really was. It really was. Did he keep that shirt number till he left?
Yeah, we retired it after he left. Because he was such an outstanding success as a player and a captain that we decided to retire. Actually, yeah, the number 10 and the name William. So we can never have another player called William ever again.
That's why the Carvalho deal fell through.
That's the reality of it, folks. Yeah.
That's definitely the most irritating.
I would agree.
Are there others in the current squad that we've done quite well to sort of sort it out, haven't we?
Yeah, let me just have a look here on the official website.
We've given
website.
Kieran Gibbs number 3, we've given Debussy number 2.
Yeah, I mean they're the proper fullback numbers, aren't they, you know?
Yeah.
Let me just see. No, I don't think there's anything that particularly stands out. We don't have a 5.
It's almost as if we don't have enough centre-backs.
Because 5 is a good proper centre-half number.
Yeah.
And we don't have a 5.
Let's hope we've got a 5 at the end of January.
Why couldn't we give Callum Chambers 5?
I don't know.
Yeah.
Especially if that was always the plan for him to be the centre-half cover. I suspect it wasn't. I suspect we were trying to get someone else. We're looking for that number 5, the elusive number 5.
Yeah, keeping
it. Never happened.
Yeah. That's a lure, isn't it? Come play for us and you can have the number 5.
It would be a factor in my thinking, definitely.
What's your number in 11 aside? What do you like?
From 1 to 11? Yeah. Or are we talking big, crazy squad numbers?
No. From 1 to 11. You know, when you're playing Sunday League and there's no such thing as, you know, 42. It's like everyone's got a shirt, you know, from 1 to 11.
Well, I've played a lot of left back, so I think I've got to say 3, really.
Yeah.
You know, that. I mean, if you ask me what my favourite number is, I find the most romance is attached to the number 7.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, there's something about it.
7 and 11 I like. I always liked 11 too.
Yeah.
But no, not that I ever played with a 7 or an 11.
No.
No, I was a 4 or a 6 was my thing, and a 6 is my favourite, really.
6 is a good number in Arsenal terms. Tony Adams, yeah. Laurent Koscielny.
Yeah.
We've had some good 3s as well. 11's an interesting one. Who's our 11 now?
Ozil.
Of course it is.
Yeah.
That old guy. I forgot all about him.
Yeah, how could you forget the £42.5 million record signing?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's almost as if he's disappeared.
Imagine. Okay. Right, let's have another question.
Okay, let's have another question. All right, this one comes from Bob Billingworth. At least I think that's his name. I might have got it. Oh, no. It's Bob Illingworth. I just got carried away with the bees.
You gone bee crazy.
Yeah, I got too plosive there. He says, with the busy schedule, I mean, write in on that one, guys. I'm not sure.
Is it schedule or schedule?
It depends if you're American or English, apparently. I don't know what the Irish do.
Is it issue or issue?
Issue for me.
Yeah, for me as well. For me.
Okay. With the busy schedule, do you see Arsene Wenger rotating Giroud and Welbeck, or starting them together?
Rotating more than starting them together, I think.
Yeah.
I mean, it strikes me that in a pure 4-4-2, they might be a really good partnership because they complement each other quite well in that Giroud is good in around the box, holding the ball up, and Welbeck, as we saw with that goal for England the other night, his movement is very good. And that, you know, if he could play off a guy who plays those little flicks in around the corner, then, yeah, it could work pretty well. But I think, for the most part, when you've got a player like Alexis, who's got to play with one of them, basically, because when you put him in the middle, he's quite devastating. You know, unless you shunt him out wide. Not that I think Alexis has any problem with that either, because he was talking during the week.
He seems to say it's his favourite position, doesn't he?
Yeah, he said he doesn't care. He'll play anywhere. Play as a striker, play wide right, play wide left. He doesn't care. He just wants to play football. So I don't think it's an issue that you're going to play him in a position where he's going, why am I being put here?
No.
As opposed to perhaps the mysterious number 11, whose name we can't remember, clearly wants to play in a more central position, right?
Mm.
But look, you know, I think what Giroud does is give the team some qualities that it doesn't necessarily have right now. With his back to goal, he's very good. He's got really nice hair.
He's got great hair.
Cheekbones are good. You know, there's a cheekbone deficit in the squad.
Yeah.
The finger waggling, we certainly, you know, are missing that in a big way. Because how else is a referee supposed to know a player is mildly discomforted unless he's snapping his fingers in dismay?
And I think with, you know, Debuchy, Koscielny and Diaby all out, Coquelin on loan, it's fair to ask, are we French enough?
That is a good question. That is a good question.
And I can't think of anyone more French, really, in modern football than Olivier Giroud. He's pretty French.
Yes, him and Marcel Marceau.
They're right up there.
They are. It's interesting. Andrew Allen pointed out to me there yesterday that look at the long-term injuries we've had this season. Koscielny's out. Debuchy's out. Giroud's out. All French.
Mm.
Perhaps there's something in their diet that they're missing.
Perhaps.
Wine.
Perhaps. Yeah, exactly. Not enough wine.
Not enough wine.
I think it'll be interesting to see what happens with these two, Giroud and Welbeck. I think it's very hard to call which one will, you know, kind of emerge as the first choice.
Mm.
But I think that's probably a healthy thing.
Yeah, yeah. All right.
Let them fight it out. Let them wrestle it.
Well, exactly. Competition is good. It's good. Yeah. Assuming that, you know, they're, you know, the best man is allowed win in that sense.
Indeed.
If you know what I mean. All right, here's one from Jamie Webb, at Jamie Webb 1993.
Okay.
He wants to know, what song title best summarises Arsenal's season so far? I'd suggest Oops, I Did It Again by Britney Spears.
I was laughing because I already knew who that was by, being a big Britney fan.
Yes.
You can imagine.
Yeah, well, no, I mean, it goes without saying. What an entertainer.
I don't know. Johnny Cash, Hurt.
That would be a good one. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a cover, actually, isn't it? It's not his originally.
No, Nine Inch Nails.
Good knowledge, yeah.
Yeah, no, that's good. It feels like we're, you know, playing with Nine Inch Nails in our feet.
maybe that is what Abu Dhabi's been doing all this time.
Yeah.
It would explain a lot.
Yeah.
What about yourself? Any thoughts?
Good question. There's a David Bowie song from the Ziggy Stardust album called It Ain't Easy, which strikes me as good.
Yeah.
Rock and Roll Suicide is also on that album, and if you change rock and roll to football or defensive, that would also work quite well. But maybe we're being a little bit too in the past here. We should be more modern. Although I'm not too up on my modern music with these, that Ed guy. You know Ed guy?
Ed Shearer.
Yeah, Ed Shearer. Yeah, he's Alan Shearer's son.
Alan Shearer's son.
Yeah, Alan Shearer's son. And that other guy who sings like, you know, the other guy, I don't know his name, but he sings like, that guy. Everything he sings is like.
Do you mean Sam, is it Sam Smith?
That's the guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's quite chubby, isn't he, for a pop star? I don't mind that.
Do you think he's just bringing it back to the common people? Like, pop stars shouldn't be chubby?
Yeah, exactly. I like it. He's, you know, I think he's showing anyone can make it if you can make that weird noise.
Yeah.
It's very much like that, yeah.
Yeah. Well, look, you know, he's found a niche because there aren't too many people who go.
No. Only dogs can hear him.
Yeah.
It's quite the niche. What are we being too negative? What about something, you know, Hero, say, the Mariah Carey song for Alexis Sanchez? Is there any, are there positives we can touch on here?
Yeah, that's a good one. That's a good one.
Hero, Enrique Iglesias.
Yeah.
Well. That's a hell of a song.
Really is. Really is. I'd love to hear Sam Smith sing that song.
I mean, they all sound like that, really, don't they?
Yeah.
When they go through the prism that is Sam Smith.
Yes, Yes. All right. So, in short, we don't know.
We don't know any music from the last 10 years, so sorry.
Yeah. Apart from Sam Smith.
But Sam Smith's good, even though he's a bit chubby. Right. What? Should we have another one?
Yeah, why not?
Okay. This is from Brian Bennett, and that is his name. His name is not Brian Ennett, and I've got carried away again.
Yeah, you've got the B quotient absolutely perfectly this time.
Yeah, his name is Brian Bennett.
His name is Brian Bennett.
And he asks, what is your most and least favourite Arsenal jersey from over the years?
My most favourite jersey is the jersey that we wore in the 1979 FA Cup final. Because okay. It's so fucking awesome. It's yellow and it's got the blue and it's just the most beautiful kit. The most beautiful away kit, I
Lovely.
Think. So that's my favourite. My least favourite, it's a bit of a toss-up here. I didn't like the thing, the purple and stripey one that we had a couple of years ago in Podolski's first season when we played at Anfield
we're
and
at
we
Anfield.
Won.
Yeah.
That's disgusting. Pretty much any of the blue kits are horrible. And I think we wore a blue kit. Was it Robbie Fowler scored a hat-trick against us in about 3 minutes or 4 minutes some seasons
yeah,
back?
Crazy like that.
And I think we were wearing a blue kit that day. And whatever, yeah, that to me is the most horrendously disgusting Arsenal kit I've ever seen. But any number of the blue efforts over the past couple of seasons have been awful. I just can't bear them because they were designed for leisure wear, not for kit wear, you know.
Mm.
So yeah, that would be mine. What about yours?
I'm just trying to think. I think in terms of favourites, there was a recent one I really liked, which was the. I think it was the 125th year anniversary one. It had the massive badge with, like, the laurel around
yeah.
it. But it was a very simple kit. It was just red with white sleeves.
Mm.
And I liked
classic.
That.
Classic.
Yeah, indeed. In terms of kits that I really didn't like, I think it was a third kit, but it was a white shirt.
Oh, yeah.
That?
Yeah, 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 yeah.
It was pretty hideous. It was around the Gallas era. I seem to remember.
He probably designed it
I
and
think
insisted
he did
on it.
Commission it, yeah. And it was like a horrible white effort with some sort of maybe slight pinstripe.
I remember Adi Bayor being in that kit.
Yeah, it was worn by all our heroes. and I... yeah, it was horrific. It was yeah. That was a bad year for kits, I seem to remember. But that was kind of... I think we had a blue kit and a white kit that year.
Yeah. God.
Not
Why
awful.
Can't they just, you know, yellow and blue, fuckers, and red and white. It's just not that difficult. You
oh,
know.
By the way,
yes.
I've got to ask, on
mm-hmm.
this subject, someone asked, it was Adam Arsenal. He says, it may sound silly, but do you think the new kits have played a part in performances? Players don't look comfortable, etc.?
No, I think we had this about the shirt grabbing,
yeah.
didn't we? But no, I don't think so. I don't think so.
You don't think it's making them feel a bit self-conscious, maybe?
That they're a bit nipply.
Yeah.
That they're, yeah. They're,
I don't
they're
know,
winking.
Look, Adam's prefaced it with may sound silly, but I thought while we were on the subject...
Of silliness.
And kits.
Yes. Oh, sorry, kits, yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe. I guess they would have some Under Armour stuff as well, wouldn't they? So they wouldn't be too cold. But yeah, they do look like when it rains, they look particularly uncomfortable shirts. But I don't know that that really has any impact on how they play.
Mm.
Don't think so. But I think those Puma skin-tight kits look a lot better at a World Cup when the sun is shining than they do... in a soggy Welsh afternoon against Swansea, for example.
Yeah, that's true.
Purr looks a bit uncomfortable.
Yeah, he does. It's not ideal.
All right, we're going to have one final question, and this comes from Christian, and he's at CSJDKK1, and he wants to know, mm-hmm. will there ever be a boy born who can swim faster than a shark?
The eternal question.
Yeah.
I'm going to say that there might be, because there might be like mutants born, mightn't there? I mean, I've seen X-Men, and I assume that is some sort of forward-looking documentary. I think there could be. There's a lot of nuclear testing going on.
Yeah.
And I just think the gene pool could mutate significantly for an outlier to be born who had that kind of phenomenal swimming capability.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's certainly... I don't know how fast a shark swims, if I'm honest.
I've just Googled that. I just Googled that. And Wikipedia says, how fast can a shark... In general, sharks swim... in brackets, cruise at an average speed of 8 kilometers per hour, 5 miles per hour. But when feeding or attacking, the average shark can reach speeds upwards of 12 miles per hour, which sounds pretty slow to me. I would have thought sharks could swim a lot faster than that.
12 miles an hour?
Yeah.
I think I could swim faster than a shark.
Yeah.
I mean, let's not test it. Definitely.
However,
not.
Ask.com says, because of its highly streamlined shape and powerful swimming muscles, a great white shark can swim up to 35 miles per hour in short bursts.
Here we go. Now
that's more like it.
That's
more like
it.
But I think that a boy could one day swim faster than a shark because, here's the thing, sharks, as we know, have been around for millions of years, right?
Yeah.
Like, you know... from way, way back when sharks were first introduced into the ocean by the shark god. But they haven't changed a great deal. Same way crocodiles haven't changed a great deal, have they? Like your great white shark is your great white shark. But if you were...
evolutionary lazy.
If you were to build an underground dome or an underwater dome in which you were to breed... selective humans and then send them out and to go swimming, maybe evolution would change the human shape physiology to the point where, you know, you'd start getting webbed fingers and perhaps instead of feet you'd have flippers and maybe a dorsal fin. So you could have a kind of a shark human hybrid boy.
Is that still a boy?
Well, technically, because it would have a winkle.
Right. Well, that's the differentiator for me.
So I think it could happen, but not for millions of years, and none of us will be alive to see it.
I mean, the fastest swimming man at present, apparently, is the record is an average speed of 5.3 miles per hour.
That's slow, surely. Surely somebody can swim faster than that.
Surely one of our listeners, if they really put their mind to it...
could swim more than that, yeah. In short
I think
bursts.
Anyone could, if they really could be bothered.
Yeah, but that's the thing. Nobody's bothered.
Let's get a pool. One lane's a shark, and one lane is a queue of our listeners, and we'll find the boy.
We don't want to lose too many listeners, though.
Don't worry, we'll have, you know, something separating the lanes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Don't know what.
A piece of
a line of Tottenham fans.
That could do it, all right. So, in conclusion, yes, it will happen, but no, it won't happen before Band-Aid 407 is out.
No.
No.
Feed the world.
Let
them know it's time we found a boy faster than a shark.
Yes. And as Sam Smith would say, I think we should leave it there.
Yeah, let's go.
Thanks for listening, folks.
Bye-bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.